as no one was watching. Keeping them off balance wasn't a bad thing either. She wondered that the cards Charles had given her hadn't burned their way out of her purse from the blaze of frictional heat. They'd already dropped one load of shopping at the hotel and had just completed the last bit. "We're about halfway between the hotel and Angus's offices," she said. "Which way should we head?"
"I'll take you back to Charles," said Tom.
"If you're gonna eat with that stuck-up Brit, you need to get ready," advised Moira. "Go to the hotel and start on it. You have a cell. Your mate has a cell. If he doesn't know where to find you, he can call."
Anna looked at Tom. He shrugged, his face not looking half as meek as his words.
"You think I'm gonna argue with her? You've got another thing coming."
Moira bumped him with her hip. "Ooh, you're so scared of me."
The big scary wolf grinned, his mouth pulled a little by the scar on his face.
"Truth. Nothing but the truth."
He spoiled it by rubbing the top of her head. Then he kept his head where it was so he could stay out of reach as she batted at him. Anna had quit being nervous around him after the first hour as he patiently led them from one store to another. She'd heard of Pike Place Market for years, and at first she hadn't been that impressed. It looked like just another flea market with fresh fruit and fish. Then Moira began tugging her here and there to this little store and that little booth. For a blind woman, she was a heck of a shopper, and Tom was always in the right place to put his arm out to guide her and murmur low-voiced warnings as they dodged around other shoppers and across the uneven floor. Tom was consulted about fit and color, while Moira fingered fabrics and dickered with the shopkeepers. The result was that for less than she'd spent on a couple of pairs of jeans in high school, she had the beginnings of a whole wardrobe. When the booth didn't take credit, Tom paid despite Anna's protests.
"Calm down," he told her. "Charles is good for it."
The last statement seemed to amuse him. She also acquired a whole slew of Christmas presents as ordered. Last year she'd been afraid and too broke to send presents to her father and brother. This year she and Charles had them and all of Charles's family and a double handful of others to buy for. The conference would run through Christmas. She had the impression that there had been some incident that had stepped up the Merrick's timetable. Charles had been gone for a couple of days and returned even more grim than usual. He hadn't volunteered where he'd gone or what he'd done, and she'd been too intimidated by his oppressive silence to ask. It had been the next day that the Merrick began planning this summit, and he and Charles had begun to fight about it. She'd found a pair of small gold hoop earrings with round bits of rough amber for Charles to replace the one he'd given to the troll. And at the same shop, she broke down and bought a cheaper, more dangly pair for herself. She felt guilty about it, but maybe she could pay him back for them. They had been cheaper than they would have been in Chicago. She came out of a little shop, the proud new owner of three silk shirts, and her gaze caught on the display window of a store a few doors down.
"What?" Moira said urgently. "What is it, Tom?"
"A quilt, I think," he rumbled. "Geez, Moira, if the two of you buy anything more, I'm gonna have to help carry stuff, and that makes me a lousy guard."
The quilt was trimmed with narrow strips of red and green, the colors of the old Pendleton blankets. On the interior, there were four squares and a center section that was round. The square panels were abstract mountain scenes of the same mountain. The top two were daylight, spring and summer. The bottom were night, fall and winter. The center panel was deep mottled green, with the red silhouette of a wolf howling.
"I don't think we face anything worse than a pickpocket here," Moira was saying to Tom. "I trust you to handle them with a few bags on one arm?"
Moira touched Anna's shoulder.
"What are you doing out here? Go in and buy it. Tom, what does it look like?"
Anna looked at the price on a discreet tag pinned to the edge of the quilt and swallowed. They went back to the hotel after that. Anna, the proud new owner of three quilts, one for her dad, one for the Merrick, and one for Charles, the one she'd seen in the window.
"You can put them down on the bed," Tom said, sounding amused. "They won't break or run away."
"I'm in shock," Anna told him. "Except for the first time I saw Charles, I don't think I've ever lusted after something so badly in my life."
Then, because Tom, at least, would know that she wasn't telling the whole truth,
"Okay, there was that cello at the Luthiers in Chicago that cost more than most cars and was worth every cent." "And she kept finding more quilts," said Moira to the air, her amusement evident.
"I couldn't help it," Anna said. Even though she was joking, mostly, she was still shocked by the sheer possessiveness she'd felt. They were lucky she'd stopped at 3. Maybe I'll have to take up quilting.
Do you sew?
Moira asked. Not yet. Anna heard the determination in her voice.
What do you think? Will I be able to find someone to show me how to do this in Aspen Creek, Montana?
Tom laughed.
Anna, I think Charles would fly you to England twice a week if you wanted him to. You should be able to find someone to learn from closer than that.
His statement gave her an odd feeling. She touched the package she'd wrapped for Charles, then turned with a smile when Moira told them both they needed to get moving because there were shoes to be found and the day was wasting. Anna pulled the hotel room door shut behind them and tried to deal with the revelation that she was pretty sure Tom was right. It wasn't until they were standing in front of the elevators that she found her balance. So he would fly her to England if she asked him to. She'd followed him up a frozen mountain buried in the depths of a Montana winter, hadn't she? It made them equals.
Hey,
Moira snapped her fingers in front of Anna's nose.
Shoes, remember?
The elevator had opened.
Sorry, she said. Revelation here.
Ah, Moira appeared to consider that for a moment.
Nope, shoes are more important, especially if you're going to have that British snob eating at your feet.
And so Anna girded herself and set off for a second round of marathon shopping. Dark came early in the dead of winter, even if it was just raining. When Moira had done her worst, when Tom was complaining about numb feet and Anna had shoes, and her hair trimmed and styled, Moira finally relented and told them they could head back. To the hotel, the witch insisted firmly, not the auditorium. Moira leaned around Tom as if she needed to see Anna's face when she made her final pronouncement.
Men don't care about dressing for dinner. Men shave and put on a tie and poof, that's good enough.
What? They stormed out of the darkness of a basement apartment stairwell and brought a spell of silence and shadow with them. A spell that had hidden them from Tom's sharp senses as well as Anna's less well-trained sensory abilities. They hit Tom first, but not by much. Anna heard Tom's gasp, but before she could see what had happened to him, a delicate, strong-as-steel arm snaked around her throat. Magic moved and settled around them all, a familiar spell, one used by packs to conceal fights or kills or anything else they didn't want the rest of the world to know about. But the attackers didn't smell like wolves. As she fought to free her throat, she could see one of their attackers, a woman, run into the witch like a linebacker, knocking her down, off the curb, and into the street. A scream cut short, and a body hit pavement hard from Tom's direction. She couldn't see him, but it wasn't Tom who had screamed. She'd be willing to bet Tom had never made a sound that high-pitched in his life. Moira's attacker left the blind witch to help the others with Tom.
Pretty Anna.
Her attacker was a woman, and as she whispered, she licked Anna's throat. She wasn't human, though. Nothing human could have immobilized Anna this easily, or taken down Tom in whatever numbers.
Come with me, little girl, and the others will survive.
And, the immediate shock of the attack over, Anna kicked and broke the enemy's knee. She wasn't a little girl, she was a werewolf. The woman screamed into her ear, a sharp, high-pitched noise that deafened and hurt and drove Anna to the pavement to escape it. Hard hands dug into her shoulders in preparation to drag her somewhere. Anna twisted and writhed and hit the woman's jaw with her heel. That stopped the noise. Her wolf took over then, not in wolf body, but in her human form. Anna taught the woman what she should already have known. Omega didn't mean doormat. It didn't mean weak. It meant strong enough to do exactly what it had to in order to triumph, whether that meant cringing in the presence of dominant wolves or tearing her enemy apart. Anna was too far gone to pinpoint exactly when she understood what had attacked them. Vampires. But she remembered Asiel's lessons in how to kill them. When the vampire lay in two pieces, body at her feet and head rather nearer to Moira, who was screaming in incoherent rage, the wolf gave a satisfied snort and let Anna take over. And Anna heard what the wolf had not. What Moira was yelling was,
damn it, tell me what they are! Tom, Tom, Anna!
And as she sprinted to the pile of bodies that must have Tom on the bottom, Anna told her,
vampires!
Moira didn't hear her, so Anna ripped the arm off the vampire she'd been trying to pry off Tom and yelled,
vampires, Moira, vampires!
And light exploded around them, warm and brilliant. and the vampires she and Tom hadn't killed stopped fighting and ran. Anna's vampire grabbed his arm off the ground before tearing after the others. Anna took a step after them, then forced herself to stop. There were still four vampires, and that was probably three too many for her, and she couldn't abandon her fallen comrades.
Tom?
He's alive, she told Moira after a quick but thorough examination, done from 5 feet away. But he's gonna need a moment before he's ready to believe we aren't the enemy. She knelt beside the witch.
You all right?
Fine, damn it, just fine. Moira was bleeding. Anna could smell it, but not a lot. She saw cuts on knees and elbows, but nothing horrible. The horrible thing had nothing to do with the vampire attack. Moira's glasses had been knocked to the pavement, and Anna saw what she'd hidden behind them. One eye scarred beyond belief, as if someone had ripped it out with a clawed hand. The other withered like a raisin, a sickly, yellowish-white raisin. Without a word, Anna found the sunglasses, which were unbroken, and put them in Moira's hand. The witch's hand shook as she shoved them onto her face. Then she steadied. Anna understood about shields and the odd shape they sometimes took.
He'll be all right, Anna said, glad that Moira couldn't see what Tom looked like.
It would be easier to convince her that he would be all right that way. Werewolves were tough.
Can you shield us from sight? The vampires were doing it, or someone was.
It had felt like pack magic.
And now that they've run, it's gone.
She didn't know enough about pack magic to do it herself, and it usually required a pack anyway. Her pack, her new pack, was at Aspen Creek, two states away.
I can manage for a little bit, but you'll have to tell me if it's working, Moira told her,
sounding more like the opinionated woman Anna had been spending the day with, and less like the scary witch. Anna glanced around, but the beheaded vampires' bodies had turned to ash, either from true death or from Moira's sunlight. She didn't know that much about vampires.
That'll work, said Tom, though he didn't make any effort to move.
His voice was still growly, and his eyes gleamed yellow in the darkness.
Anna, my cell's in pieces, and Moira won't carry one. You need to call for help. I'm not going to be walking anywhere for a few days.
Dominant wolves didn't deal well with injuries like that, ones that left them vulnerable. Angus's pack would be set up like most of them, Angus clearly at the head, then two or three near the top, the rest ready to step in when necessary. And Tom had a broken arm, and she was pretty sure there was other damage not immediately obvious.
You have a healer, right? Anna asked.
Alan Chu, said Tom. But you call Charles and tell him to send.
Deciding he wasn't going to budge, she turned to Moira, who'd followed Tom's voice until she could touch him. From the look on her face, it was a good thing for the vampires that they were either dead or had fled.
Moira, tell me about Alan Chu. How dominant is he?
He's not, Tom sounded exasperated. He can't make you safe.
A moment before, Anna had been numb and shaking with the after effects of the fight, but when his words registered, Anna was suddenly furious that Tom would put himself at risk for her, again, because the vampires had been hunting her. Power came to her call, and she said, I will make myself safe. When he didn't have anything to say to that, she turned to the witch.
Moira, do you have Alan Chu's number?
Give me your cell phone and I'll call him myself. Moira said in an odd voice.
Anna handed it over and turned to deal with the witch's mate and found him looking at her with a little smile.
Shit, woman, he said. I haven't been put in my place so well since the last time Charles did it. You'd better call him. Your mate's going to be wondering why you drew upon him that way.
What way? But telling him she didn't have the slightest idea what he was talking about didn't appeal to Anna. She'd learned about revealing weaknesses, too, even if she liked him.
He'll have to wait. Moira, tell Mr. Chu to meet us at my hotel room.
And just how are we going to get to the hotel room without help? Tom asked.
He tried to sit up and failed.
Shit, he said. I'm not going anywhere for a while.
Anna waited until Moira was through talking to their medic and took her phone back from Moira. Then she answered his question.
Your mate's going to keep us invisible, and I'm carrying you back to the hotel.
At Moira's astonished face, she rolled her eyes before she remembered the witch couldn't see her.
Werewolf here. I may not look like a brawny male, but I can carry Tom to the hotel just fine.
Tom relaxed a little.
We don't have any females, he said. You look pretty scrawny. I forgot.
She looked at him, and he gave her a faint smile.
Sorry.
They weren't too far from the hotel, but it seemed like 100 miles. Tom was not light. Werewolves are denser than humans, and she kept worrying about the pained sounds he made, no matter how carefully she walked. Then he quit making sounds, and that was worse. And remembering to warn Moira about curbs and broken bits of sidewalk was harder than Tom had made it look. Just when she was ready to call it over, she looked up, and there was the hotel. Her cell rang. A couple of people coming out of the restaurant attached to the hotel padded pockets and looked bewildered, so Anna thought that maybe Moira's spell was fading. Anna's hands were occupied, so Moira pulled the phone out of Anna's jacket and silenced it. Tom had lost consciousness a little while back, and Anna worried about blood trail, but it couldn't be helped. She'd figured out a plan of action on the way back. She'd call Charles and explain the situation. If she understood about pack hierarchy and Tom's danger as a wounded dominant, certainly Charles would, too. "Door," she whispered to Moira, and the witch trailed her fingers from the place on her shoulder to the glass door and held it open while Anna scooted inside with her wounded burden.
"Windy tonight,"
someone in the lobby commented as the door shut behind them. By some luck, there was no one in the hall by the elevators or on their floor when it stopped. Anna had to set Tom down to find the key card for her room. Moira stayed beside him, murmuring softly when Anna left him there as she tore the bedding from the bed and layered it with towels to absorb the blood. Getting Tom up again took time they didn't have. He was semi-conscious and defensive, and Anna was anything but calm. Finally, she just hefted him up. If he bit her, she'd still have time to get him in and shut the door. He was in too rough a shape to do any real damage, not compared to the damage the vampires had done on purpose, and she found that she was willing to risk that. But he didn't bite her. She got him into the room, on the bed. Moira shut the door, and they both heaved a sigh of relief. Anna's phone rang for the second time. Moira shoved it into her bloody hands. It was Charles.
"Anna?"
His voice was dark and urgent, and as soon as she heard it, she felt him running through the dark streets, felt his panic and the rising rage behind it like a dark tide of violence. "I'm fine," she told him, though after she said it, she wasn't entirely sure that was true. In the heat of the battle, nothing had hurt, but she'd caught a few good punches and given a few, too. She didn't remember it, really, but her knuckles were sore, and so was her right shoulder. And her stomach wasn't too happy with her, either. Fortunately, she hadn't taken stock until after she'd told him.
"Angus's healer called Angus to tell him he'd been summoned to our hotel room," Charles said, "just after I felt your need."
Anna remembered the power she'd summoned to shut Tom up, and his conviction that Charles would feel it. Leah, the Merrock's mate, sometimes used Bran's clout when Bran wasn't even there. Evidently, Anna could do the same thing. "Yes, well," Anna looked around and took in a deep breath. That secrecy spell, the one the vampires used, had some odd effects on the combatants, too, she remembered, enforcing the need for secrecy. She should have called Charles right away.
"I'd like it if you'd come here, too."
She'd like it a lot.
"Maybe Angus, but no one else. Tom's been hurt pretty badly."
"Badly enough the rest of his pack needs to stay away," said Charles coolly.
Her sense of him had faded with his urgency, and she wasn't sure she should trust that coolness. The drop from violence to calm had been too fast.
"Right," she answered, though it hadn't been a real question. "Moira and I got him back here, but I didn't realize how badly he was bleeding. There's probably a blood trail."
"No," said Moira firmly, though she was as white as the sheet she was sitting on, as white as it was because they were both covered in blood.
"I took care of the blood."
Anna had learned enough about witchcraft to know that she didn't want to know any more. The alert beast inside her accepted provisionally that they were safe.
"You heard that?"
"I did."
"So we're safe in the room. Tom's not mortally wounded, I don't think."
The room abruptly smelled different.
"He's changing."
"Best thing for him to do if he can," said Charles. "You stay back from him. Moira should keep him calm enough that he's safe to be around. I'm coming, and I'll call Angus and tell him that if he values his second, he'll call off the rest of the pack. I'll be there in a couple of minutes, and you can give me the whole story then."
Her phone stopped making noise, so she decided that he must have ended the call.
"Have you been around Tom when he changes before?"
Anna asked Moira softly.
"Yes,"
said the witch.
"Good." She let herself sink into the chair opposite the bed. Just sit still. It'll take a while longer this time. And changing when you hurt really sucks. He'll be vile-tempered when he comes out of it. Maybe not really himself, not for a while. Give him a little time before you touch him. He'll probably let you know when he can bear it.
They almost killed us, Moira said. If I could have seen them.
That blast of sunlight was impressive, Anna told her. Next time we're attacked by vampires, I'll cower behind you and shout what they are into your ear. She paused. It's a good thing you were with us. We'd have lost on our own. Someone knew a great deal about Tom.
She remembered the dog pile of vampires who'd been trying to kill him, virtually ignoring her and Moira.
But they discounted you.
Why would vampires attack us? Asked Moira. Oh, I know they aren't friendly, but they're practical. Attacking Charles's mate is anything but practical.
Someone paid them, I expect, Anna said tiredly. Someone they were pretty certain could and would keep Charles away from them.
Someone who knew we'd be out shopping today.
She looked down at her hands as Tom growled and wheezed with the difficulty of the change. Then she said the last bit slowly.
Someone who could give them pack magic to mask the noise and the bodies until they were done.
You think one of the werewolves is behind this?
I don't know.
But she was afraid she did.
Tom completed his change. His breath came out in harsh, groaning pants. His fur was chocolate brown, except where a silvery scar wound around his muzzle. And he was nearly as big as Charles in wolf shape.
Charles was a very big wolf.
Moira reached out and touched his neck, and the wolf lunged, sending Anna to her feet. But before she did anything stupid, he settled again, his head in Moira's lap. Someone knocked on the door, and it wasn't Charles.
Chapter 6 Charles forced himself to walk. There was no hurry. Tom would have been a problem under other circumstances, but his mate was there to keep him under control, and even mad from pain and weakness, Tom wouldn't hurt an Omega. He was off balance, Anna's fault. He wasn't used to panicking, and it put him on edge. There were very few people he'd cared for enough to panic over, and most of them were long dead and forever beyond need of his aid. His father and his brother Samuel, he could usually trust to take care of themselves. Anna left him vulnerable. She'd said she was fine, and she meant it. He'd heard the stress of survival in her voice, but she was safe for now, and Tom would need calm to deal with his wounds, not some adrenaline-jacked wolf who wasn't one of his pack. But even at a slow, steady pace, Brother Wolf fought against his control, growing more upset, not less. And the human half wasn't far behind. Someone had tried to hurt his Anna, and he hadn't been there to prevent it. A young man walking in the other direction jerked his head to stare at Charles and quickly dropped his gaze when his eyes met Charles's. Only then did Charles realize he was growling softly. He stopped, sucked in a deep breath, and hesitated as the air he'd taken told him something unusual. Something missing, something like the usual concentration of city smells. He stood on a wide swath of pavement that was as clean as it had been the day it was poured. No visible garbage wasn't really strange, not in Seattle, where the rain washed the sidewalks on a regular basis. But no garbage, no scent, no anything. That was odd. Odd enough to allow him to hold off the frantic need to find Anna and assure himself she was fine, if only for just long enough to think. Tom's witch had dealt with the blood trail, she'd said. And he was willing to bet that he was looking at the results. A wobbling stretch of walk 2 shades whiter than the cement around it, it was still a trail for anyone who wanted to follow it, though he supposed a blind woman couldn't know that. And it was a lot better than the blood that would have sent a slew of human police to the hotel. He could follow it to the hotel, or he could go hunting. He stood very still and consulted Brother Wolf. Then they turned away from the hotel. Yes, said Brother Wolf, at one with his human half. Blood and flesh would be welcome. Anna waited for them. She'd be safe with Angus in a few minutes. Angus had taken his car to the hotel, so there was time to feed. to rid them both, him and Brother Wolf, of the anger so they could regain their balance. It wasn't long, only a few blocks, until the unnaturally whitened sidewalk returned to its normally dirty state. Despite the rain, Anna's scent lingered in the air. It was full dark, though the hour wasn't late, a little after 6, he thought. It had been 20 minutes since Anna had drawn upon his power, 15 since he talked to her. The shadows wouldn't have been so dark then, but still dark enough for a lot of the nastier things to come hunting. He had stepped back into the clean space and looked around. A blackened bit of cloth, wet and dirty, a plastic bag that spilled 2 pairs of women's shoes, with another shoe, hot pink and scorched, several feet away. A little casting about on the edges of the witch's spells. And he smelled vampire. Vampires in Seattle attacking wolves. He considered it, and clenched his fists at the thought of his Anna going up against bloodsuckers. The cloth smelled of nothing. The lone pink shoe hadn't been so thoroughly caught in the witch's cleaning spell. When lifted to his nose, it smelled faintly of burning flesh and vampire. The other 4 shoes were new and smelled of leather, dye, and, lightly, of Anna. One pair was low-heeled pumps, and the other red leather and high-heeled, the kind women wore for men. Charles could care less about shoes, and he suspected he wasn't alone among men in his feelings. Shoe or no shoe, he didn't care. Naked was good, though over the past couple of weeks he was beginning to think that dressed in his clothes was a decent second best. Even smiling at the thought of Anna in his sweater, he didn't slow down his hunt. He tracked the edge of the witch's spell until he found the trail the vampires had left. Not difficult, as at least one of them was bleeding badly. He let his nose go to work. Then he had no smile left in him. A vampire, he'd thought, or possibly 2. His nose now told him there had been more than that. He caught 6 individual scents. 6 vampires who'd been after his Anna. And he wondered if she'd been as honest as he thought when she told him she was all right. The pink shoe broke in his hand, and he dropped it. He was growling again as he followed the vampires to a parking garage, space number 46. 4 minutes and a little intimidation, not difficult the way he was feeling, and he found that the space had been paid for 6 months, but occupied only now and then. No way to tell if the vampires were connected to the person who rented the space, or if they just found an empty space to use. He was inclined to suspect the latter. They weren't planning on being there long, and the cars were checked every 2 hours. "Yeah," the man, not much older than a boy really, said. He wasn't looking at Charles now, and not doing so had allowed him to calm down a little. "Someone came boiling out of here like they were fit to be tied. I remember because it was a minivan, a blue Dodge, not the kind of vehicle you roar out of town in. I didn't notice it coming in, but I did the vehicle check when I started work tonight. I don't remember a minivan except Mrs. Sullivan's parked in here when I did it." Charles wasn't concerned about that. Mind tricks that work on humans were among the most common gifts of the vampires. If they told the attendant not to remember, he wouldn't have.
"Tell me about the minivan."
"3 men and a woman. They all look like FBI, you know, expensive and conservative." The man looked up at Charles. "Are you a cop or something? Shouldn't you show me some ID?
"Or something," murmured Charles, and the attendant paled and looked away again. Gently, Charles thanked the man for the information and left. He could have gotten their faces from the cameras, but there was no need to traumatize the young man further. He had their scent, and he would not forget. If not today, then eventually he would run into them. The world was not that large to a man who lived forever. When he found them at last, he would remember this night to them. When he reached the place where the attack had occurred, he stopped and put Anna's new shoes in the plastic bag and took them with him. There had been no blood, no meat at the end of this hunt, and Brother Wolf was not satisfied. Not in the least. By the time he made it to the hotel, he'd gotten a semblance of control. It would have to do. Angus was sitting on the floor in front of their room, reading a newspaper. He didn't look like much of a guardian, but there were few other wolves Charles would rather have guarding his mate's door. There wasn't much that would be able to get past the old wolf who ruled Seattle. "Something interesting in the paper?" Charles asked politely.
"Not really, no."
Angus folded the paper back into its original shape with economical precision, then got to his feet. He kept his face averted and down. Not slow on the uptake, was the Alpha of the Emerald City Pack. Charles might have his game face on, but any wolf worth his salt would smell the frustration of a failed hunt on him from 20 feet out.
Your mate was worried about allowing anyone in before you got here. With Tom mostly down and out, and Moira...
Without enough magic to light a candle, finished Anna, opening the door. And I'm sorry, but I don't know Angus from Adam. I know we were introduced, but I met a lot of people this morning, and I think that our attack was engineered by one of our own kind. Opening the door just because someone said he was Angus didn't seem smart.
Charles gave her a sharp look. He'd smelled only vampires. Had there been a werewolf, too? He pulled the predator in him under better control once more. He needed a few answers, and he had to make sure she didn't guess how hard it was for him to appear calm and collected. It was a good thing she was still working on listening to her nose.
As there was no urgent danger threatening, wisdom dictated that I wait here until someone she knew better came, said Angus, sounding rather pleased with Anna.
Anna, said Charles, ignoring the urge to inspect her more closely to make sure she was all right. This is Angus, Alpha of Emerald City Pack. He would never, under any circumstances, have set Tom up to face a pack of vampires.
Angus gave Charles a sharp look as Anna examined him, and Charles tried to curb his possessive instincts. She was just evaluating Angus. The Emerald City Alpha was only an inch or two taller than Anna, who wasn't overly tall for a woman, and he didn't weigh much more. He was wiry and whip-thin. Sandy hair and dark eyes gave him a casual handsomeness that he used ruthlessly. People who didn't know him underestimated him all the time, which was probably one of the reasons he was so pleased with Anna's caution. The other would be that she had taken it upon herself to protect one of his wolves. But Anna knew Bran, who was even better than Angus at being underestimated. Bran did it on purpose.
I'm sorry if I offended you. Anna's apology was sincere.
No trouble, Angus said. Do I look offended? Let's all get inside and you can tell us what happened, so we'll see what's to be done.
Vampires, eh?
Anna backed away from the door. The scent of her distress and the stink of recent fear permeated the room. Her lip curled as she smelled it herself.
Sorry, she said.
Her shirt was covered with blood, and the air in the room was redolent with the rawness of open wounds.
Not hers, Brother Wolf told him hungrily, but it could have been.
He couldn't tell who had thought that last. Maybe both of them. It didn't help his control. He was having an unusually tough time keeping it together. He had to keep his distance just until he could get himself calm and centered. He allowed Angus to pass between him and Anna, and when it didn't send Brother Wolf into a rage, Charles took a deep breath of relief and allowed himself to examine Anna. Her freckles stood out on her pale cheeks, but the scent of her fear wasn't fresh. Angus hadn't scared her. She'd just been being cautious. Brother Wolf settled down, but only a little.
Here,
Charles told her, and handed her the bag of shoes. She looked at the bag blankly before her face lit up in a grin.
You are supernatural, Charles. Absolutely supernatural.
She opened the closet and dumped the shoes in with a pile of bags that hadn't been there this morning. There were a couple of plastic-covered dresses hanging next to the hotel's bathrobes, too. She'd been shopping in back once before they were attacked. The vampires could have been waiting, watching the hotel, and followed them out. A low growl in the room brought his attention back to the task at hand. The little witch, still wearing her sunglasses, was curled up on the giant pillow at the head of the bed. If Anna was pale, the witch's face was chalk-white under the inky blackness of her short hair, and she looked gaunt, as if she'd lost 10 pounds since he'd seen her earlier that day. From the dent in the bedspread, Charles could tell the brown wolf, who was Tom, had been settled in front of his witch, but the invasion of other wolves had sent him to his feet. One of his front legs was visibly crooked and must be hurting, but that didn't keep him down. Charles closed his hands on Anna's shoulders before she could get between Angus and Tom, and he brought her back against him.
No, he told her. It's all right. Angus has this in hand.
There were alphas he might be worried about, but Angus had been an alpha for a long time, and he knew what he was seeing. A wolf protecting his mate from an unknown threat. Not defiance. In a cool voice that held more than a little command, Angus said,
Tom, no harm to yours. No harm.
Angus might not be a big man, but his voice, when he chose to use it, was powerful enough to raise the dead. The wolf's lips curled away from impressive fangs and growled again.
"Down!"
Angus said, putting serious energy into the word, and the wolf sank instantly to his belly, his breathing harsh as he dealt with his unwillingness to allow others around his mate when he was injured while meeting his alpha's demand for obedience.
"Tom?"
The witch sounded lost, and Charles wondered what she thought was going on. Damnable to be helplessly blind in a world of monsters.
"He's all right," Anna told her. "Just protective of you. He knows you can't protect yourself right now, and he hasn't had time to gather himself together from that rough change yet. He's hurt and not thinking right. Everyone is going to give him just a minute to calm down."
Slick, he thought with a secret smile. Anna slid that information to Angus as if she were just talking to Moira, so he wouldn't think she was trying to tell him what to do. Then she'd spoiled it all by ordering everyone, Charles included, to leave Tom alone. The white flash of Angus's teeth told him that he'd caught it, too, and had chosen to be amused.
"We'll do just that," Angus said, settling himself on the arm of the chair nearest to the window. "Alan called while I was in the hallway. He's about 5 minutes out. While we're waiting for him and for Tom, why doesn't someone enlighten me as to what damaged my wolf?"
"Vampires," said Anna. "Six of them. And they hunted like a pack."
She glanced at Charles.
"You mean as if they'd hunted together before?"
he said. Charles knew his calm facade was in place because her nod was matter of fact.
"Exactly," she said. "They didn't get in each other's way, not even when five of them ganged up on Tom after they'd knocked Moira over. They were in a basement apartment stairwell and hidden behind a shadow spell. It smelled like wolf magic to me, unless the vampires have access to the same thing. If Moira hadn't brought the sun in, we'd be dead."
5-on-1 was difficult to manage, especially with a cunning old wolf like Tom, who knew how to maximize others' weaknesses. And a shadow spell. Anna was right. That sounded like a hunting pack. Except they were dealing with vampires.
"There are vampiric spells that could mimic one of ours," said Angus. "Tom's old enough to tell the difference. When he can think again, we can ask. That's what made you think that they were sent by a wolf?"
Anna nodded, but Moira added, "Vampires don't lightly take on the wolves, not in this city anyway. They were trying to kidnap Anna. And what would a vampire want with Charles's mate?"
Angus smiled coldly. The wolves in Seattle had held the upper hand for decades.
"If the vampire seethe here found themselves holding Charles's mate, they'd escort her back with armed guards and polish her fingernails before they delivered her to me without a hair on her head out of place. I'll certainly call their master, but I suspect they are interlopers. He should know about them, and if so, maybe he'll have some names for me."
"One of them was a woman who wore a size 6 shoe," Charles said, "but I don't think she'll be a problem to anyone again."
Moira's part in the story bothered him. She'd saved Anna, but he frowned at her.
"Witch, I've never heard of a white witch who could call sunlight. That's not even something witchcraft should be able to call. Witches know mind and body, not the elements."
"I didn't call sunlight,"
she snapped, responding to his tone of voice, he thought, rather than his words.
"Just made the vampire's bodies believe in it. Even the dead bodies."
She wiggled her fingers.
"And they were dust or running away."
"That's a lot of magic. Vampires have some resistance. And then you made your trail disappear for the better part of a mile."
"She's a white witch," snapped Angus.
Moira grinned fiercely.
"I'm a mutant, all right. Poor little blind white witch."
"Sacrifice," said Charles slowly, "is the power that witches pull from. Mostly, it is the loss of other people's blood and flesh. But rumor has it that one of the reasons witches have familiars is that they can use them as a higher sacrifice. Not just the animal's death, but the death of something the witch holds dear."
"You think I kill kitties to power my spells?"
Her voice was nasty, and despite the nagging suspicion that all wasn't as it should be, Brother Wolf approved of her. He couldn't let it be, not with Anna's safety to worry about, but Brother Wolf's approbation gave him pause. There might be a different answer.
"I've always heard that self-sacrifice, as when the witch uses her own blood to fuel a spell, has some power, but it's difficult to work with. The witch pulled down her glasses, and he saw his guess had been correct. One eye had been blasted by magic. He'd seen similar results before, and it wasn't something he'd forget soon. Her eye was stained white and shriveled, as if something had sucked it dry. The damage had happened a long time ago, because no scent of it clung to her. And when that had happened, she would have reeked of magic for quite a while. The other eye had been destroyed more mundanely, though just as painfully, and likely just as long ago. Interestingly, Angus stiffened, as if he had not known, and Anna didn't have any reaction at all. Not to the witch's face, anyway. She was definitely reacting to him. She was not a bit happy with the way he was going after the witch. After Moira felt he'd had a chance to look his fill, she put her glasses back on. Tom stared at Charles with intelligent yellow eyes that promised retribution, and Anna looked not much happier with him.
"I don't know Moira," said Charles
to the wolf who was Tom, since he understood his reaction the best.
"I did know that I've never heard of a white witch who could do what she did. And if a black witch is masquerading as a white witch, first, the deception implies she is one of the enemy, and second," he gave the wolf a small smile, "I've never encountered a witch who could hide her nature from me."
"We were nearly killed by a black witch a few weeks ago," Anna told them, though he could tell she was still miffed with him. "It's left us a little skittish."
Moira reached out and touched Tom's flank, and let her fingers drift down over his tail, which she tugged playfully.
"It's all right, Tom. These are the good guys, even if he's being rude."
She turned her head to Charles.
"Fair enough. I've never heard of a white witch that can do what I can either, and I'm not sure how it happened exactly. I can understand being cautious."
"I'm sorry I had to push," Charles said, honestly.
"I'm sure I'll find a way to return the favor," she said, showing her teeth in a white smile. "At least you didn't say ick and run screaming."
The warm anger at the vampire attack settled a little deeper in his gut, and he let a little of it leak into his voice.
"I hope you turned whoever did into a pig."
She stilled, surprised by his reaction, he thought.
"Cowards don't deserve better," said Angus.
The witch clearly wasn't expecting support from that quarter either. Had there been so many repulsed by her scars? But what she might have said had to wait, as someone knocked tentatively at the door.
It's Alan, their interloper said. "Can someone let me in?"
The minute the Emerald City Pack submissive wolf walked through the doorway, Charles felt more settled. Alan Chu was full-blood Chinese, and he looked it, delicate and unexpectedly strong, like a well-made blade. Except for when he was alone with Anna, Charles had spent his entire life with Brother Wolf raging inside of him, pacing and growling against the trappings of civilization they were forced to bear. That's what it meant to be dominant and ready to kill anything that threatened those under his protection, kill at a moment's notice. Today was worse than usual. Brother Wolf was raging, and it was all Charles could do to make sure no one knew how hard he was struggling to hold on to control. He'd thought it only a minor addition that there were two other dominant wolves, wolves not of his pack, in the room with him and his mate. But that was before Alan Chu walked into the room. He wasn't an Omega like Anna, but he was submissive, and he knew how to deal with raging werewolves. Somehow, having him in the room tipped the balance, and between him and Anna, they calmed everyone down, including Charles. Charles sat in the chair on the other side of the little table from Angus. It was more to give Chu room to work than because he wanted to take a seat, but being able to sit down with the other wolves in the room was an improvement. Anna took a quick glance around, so Charles knew she'd sensed the new quiet in the room, too. She caught his eyes and gave him a quick smile and perched on the arm of his chair.
"He's hurt because of me," she told Chu.
Charles shook his head and told her the truth as he saw it.
"Not your fault someone decided to try to grab you. Tom did his job, don't be sorry."
"Hey, Tom, man, what you been doing to yourself?"
Chu's words might have been flippant, but his hands were careful as he handled the injured wolf. Tom allowed Alan to straighten his leg without uttering a grunt of pain. The little witch did more than enough of that for him.
Damn it," she muttered as Alan worked. "With just a little more power, I could keep this from hurting you. I'm sorry.
Finally, Angus. Angus, who had no use for anyone who wasn't a wolf, said, "Enough, Moira. It's just a little pain. Over in a moment and not worth your fussing. It would be a lot worse if you hadn't been with them. Six vampires are more than a match for two wolves, and any other witch I've ever seen. If you hadn't used up your magic when you did, no one would be worried about a little thing like a broken leg. Enough."
It was a sharpness in the last word that shut her up and earned the Alpha a glare from his wolf. Angus raised an eyebrow and Tom dropped his gaze. Angus rolled his eyes.
"God save me from lovebirds," he said, and his gaze lighted on Charles and Anna.
They weren't cuddling. Anna didn't cuddle. Charles had the feeling that if life had been fair to her, she would have enjoyed it, and maybe a few years down the line she might. But for now, he was grateful that she didn't cower every time he touched her. Still, she was sitting close enough that the old Alpha grinned.
"All of you lovebirds," he said. "It gets in the way, and I'm not patient by nature. You," he pointed a finger at Anna, and Charles was up and standing between them.
Reflex. So maybe he wasn't as relaxed as he thought. Angus dropped his finger, but finished his sentence.
"Tell me what happened. I want more details."
"Native Americans don't like to be pointed at,"
observed Chu quietly as he wrapped Tom's rib so it could heal properly.
"Native witches, skinwalkers, and the like, use the gesture to throw curses and disease."
Angus threw up his hands and dropped to his chair.
"Oh, for God's sake, I'm not a witch, I don't throw curses. I just want to know what the hell went on tonight."
He sounded frustrated and offended, but all the wolves in the room knew the truth. He was afraid of Charles. He hadn't been before, not until he looked into Brother Wolf's eyes and knew the threat of death. Angus was Alpha and old with power, but there was no question as to who was dominant. There had been no threat from Angus. Charles knew it, but it took more effort than it should have to sit down again. If Angus's quick withdrawal hadn't satisfied Brother Wolf, there would have been blood spilled. Charles took his seat slowly and reached up to put a hand on Anna's knee, the contact soothing him.
"Well," she said brightly, "hasn't this been interesting?"
She reached out and put her hand on his shoulder, as if she needed help balancing on the arm of the chair. She and he were the only ones who knew that her touch helped him find balance, while she distracted the others with her words.
"Okay, what happened?" She sucked in a breath. "Tom and Moira took me to Pike Street, and we loaded ourselves down with as much as we could carry and delivered it here. I had everything I needed except for shoes, so Moira took me to her favorite shoe place a couple miles away. We were on our way back when they jumped us. No warning, no sound, no smell. They were just on us."
A cold hand folded over his on her knee. She wasn't as calm as she sounded. He turned his hand palm up and held her fingers in his hot grip.
"Four of them attacked Tom, one hit Moira, and the other grabbed me. I killed mine."
There was a growl of satisfaction under the stress in her voice, and he tightened his grip. His mate was tough.
"By that time, Tom had killed one of his attackers, and Moira's decided she wasn't a threat and was helping the others with Tom. I was just about to throw myself into the fray when my brain caught up with my ears, and I finally realized that Moira was trying to find out what had attacked us."
Anna looked over at the witch with a grin.
"I can remember thinking, poor thing can't see what's after us, how frightening for her, and so I told her. Then we were all nearly blinded by sunlight. The dead vamps burned, and the others fled. We called Alan, and I carried Tom and led Moira back here while she cleaned up behind us and kept us out of view."
The witch, lightly petting Tom with clever fingers, gave Anna an innocent look, and Anna snorted.
"Poor little blind witch, my aching butt. One woman demolition crew, they never knew what hit them."
"You think it was a wolf behind it," Charles said.
Anna looked at him, and now that the story was laid out, she hesitated.
"Instinct," he told her, "is most often right."
Her mouth relaxed.
"Yes, I think it was a wolf."
She closed her eyes while she mulled it over.
"The attack felt like a pack attack. Hide in plain sight, enough people to do the job easily. They didn't know about Moira or they underestimated her."
She looked at him and gave him a small smile.
"And me. They concentrated their attack on the strongest of us first, werewolf tactics, and they wanted to take me away with them." What would a vampire want with me?
Wolves.
Charles tried to feel it out, but the spirits were silent, as they habitually were in the city, or any other time they might be useful.
So what do you think, Angus? Could it have been Chastel? We had a run-in last night, and he was angry enough to kill someone.
Angus was sprawled deliberately in his chair, showing how relaxed he was in Charles's presence.
The Frenchman's a beast, a powerful beast, but he's addicted to the kill. He wouldn't send anyone else. He wouldn't want someone else to spill blood that he could feast on instead. So who do you think?
Angus frowned irritably.
I don't know most of them well enough. We could question them, if we wanted to start a war. The Europeans are twitchy about their honor. If they only wanted an Omega Wolf, I'll call the Italians and warn them to keep theirs close.
Charles's eyebrows raised.
I knew they had one, but not that they brought him here.
He looked at Anna.
If he'd have been useful to you, I'd have told you about him. But he's only been a wolf for a year or so, and he knows less than you do about being a wolf at all, let alone an Omega. Asil, who was mated to an Omega, is a much better teacher. And don't you tell him I said that.
Angus turned his attention to Anna. He's a young German, actually, who was skiing in the Italian Alps and had a bad fall. The rescue worker who found him was a werewolf and felt compelled to save him any way he could.
Turned him into a werewolf, Anna said.
Charles nodded.
And the Germans were hotter than blazes when the Italians claimed him as theirs.
A custody battle, in fact, said Angus. I expect that's why the Italians brought him, to rub it in the Germans' noses that he chose to stay with them.
Charles was watching the interest in Anna's face.
Yes, he thought. You aren't alone.
He should have thought of it himself. He'd see to it she met the young German Omega.
Maybe that's it, said Moira thoughtfully. Everyone in the pack has been talking about it. Sorry, Anna, but most of them were more interested in you than in all the strange wolves coming in. Maybe it's someone who wants an Omega.
I met someone like that once, said Anna coolly. Make sure you warn the Italians.
Yes,
said Angus, with a little amused glance at Charles as Anna gave him another order.
Don't forget you have a dinner to get ready for, said Moira.
Charles looked at the witch, and he wasn't the only one. She smiled at them all.
We don't know exactly what they were trying to do. Probably they were trying to kidnap Anna. But there is a lesser chance that they didn't want you to get better acquainted with Arthur of Great Britain.
Besides, said Angus, why give them the power to change your plans when no permanent harm was done?
Yes, Charles realized. That was logic he could wrap his head around. He had no desire to go out and do the social thing at the best of times, and this attack made him want to take his mate and barricade her in where she was safe.
I'll go get another room, he said. Tom and Moira can stay here until he's healed, and order room service.
I'll stay here too, said Angus, until Tom's up to taking care of himself.
Charles looked at the Alpha and realized that he wasn't the only one feeling protective.
Good,
he told them, and left to do as he'd said. A collective sigh of relief went through the room when Charles left, but no one said anything until the elevator ding was heard faintly through the walls. Anna knew Charles had that effect on people, but she hadn't seen or felt any trouble tonight, except for the pointing finger thing.
Well, said Angus, and Tom whined. There's a reason Bran uses him to scare the bejeebers out of miscreants. I think we all saw it tonight.
So what? Asked Moira.
Exactly, said Alan Chu, who was repacking the bag he'd brought with him.
Angus pointed, and I didn't even see him move. He just was, standing between his mate and Angus.
And then he lapsed into Chinese for a few sentences.
Anna found she didn't like their being afraid of Charles. It hurt him, though he accepted it from everyone. Even if it was safer for him, it wasn't good.
Angus shook his head.
Did you see the faces on some of the wolves when he talked to them today? I suspect they didn't even know he could talk, let alone make so much sense when he did. It was as if a shark started speaking the king's English.
Tom raised his head and looked at Angus, and Alan broke off his Chinese muttering to stare at his Alpha.
Queen's English, said Anna, with more sharpness than she meant to allow, and there's nothing wrong with Charles.
Before God, there's not, agreed Angus.
I thought to myself,
well, look at that. He's conducting a meeting just like everyone else. Maybe the other rumors were exaggerated about him, too. And they weren't. Not a bit of it. I don't ever want to face that man, Fang and Claw.
If you don't shut up, Anna bit out, you might not ever have to worry about it.
And Angus sat back in his chair and smiled at her with satisfaction.
Well, now, he said in an entirely different voice, maybe I won't.
She'd missed it, she realized, looking at Tom and Alan Chu. She'd mistaken Tom's astonishment for agreement.